I'm pleased to present to you for his last session at this year's Festival Tabernacles, Mr. Eddie Chumney.
Well, shalom, everybody. Once again, I would like to say that it's a privilege, it's a joy, and it's an honor that Yeshua has given me to be able to be here with you for this Sukkot and to share with you some teachings which he's placed upon my heart. And so I want to make sure that I begin by giving honor to whom honor is due, and that is Yeshua for making this possible. Thank you for coming here and celebrating a festival of the Lord. My topic today is current events and prophecy. So I gave my topic a couple months ago, and of course, since I'm talking about current events, I didn't know a couple months ago what would be happening now. So I'm going to be sharing with you as things are on the world scene now and how I believe it is associated and related to Bible prophecy of the end of days. But first, I would like to share with you the big picture of the end of days. We are told in Joel chapter 3 in verse 2 that the nations will divide the land of Israel. And we're told in Zechariah in chapter 14 in verse 2 that Jerusalem will be divided. And we're told that this takes place in a period of time known as the Day of the Lord. Joel chapter 1 verse 15, Joel chapter 2 verses 1 and 2, and Zechariah in chapter 14 and verse 1. Now, the Day of the Lord is a term for messianic times. And we're told in the book of Genesis that evening and morning was the first day. Evening and morning was the second day. So the Day of the Lord is a reference to messianic times. And a day in the Bible, which is likened to 1,000 years, Psalm chapter 90 and verse 4, 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8, that it begins in the evening. So from a Hebraic perspective, the tribulation begins messianic times. And it is the darkness part of messianic times. And the day ends by the breaking of the day or the ending of the darkness period. And when Yeshua sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives, he's ending the darkness period. And then we have the time of light. And so, the way which we're going to understand that we are in this period of time, in this season, is when the nations divide the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. And looking at things in our world, we can see how this can be fulfilled. It's ultimately going to be fulfilled by the nations of the world recognizing a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. And in their hearts, the nations have already done this. There are approximately 193 nations that are members of the United Nations, and of the 193 nations, there is approximately 130 right now who, in essence, does recognize a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. However, that recognition has not been formally done in the United Nations through the United Nations Security Council. And there are 15 nations who are members of the United Nations Security Council, five of which are permanent members, And those five permanent members have veto over anything that comes before the United Nations. So 10 of the 15 Security Council nations rotate, five are always permanent. And those five permanent members are Russia, China, Great Britain, France, and the United States. And so in order for a nation to become a full member of the United Nations, according to UN law, that it must be with the approval of the Security Council, that of the 15 nations of the Security Council, nine must vote in favor of any resolution that comes before it, so that a formal vote gets taken by the entire Security Council. And it's possible that nine of the 15 Security Council nations say this needs to be voted on before the UN Security Council, but one of the five permanent members can then veto so that then it's not passed through the Security Council. And that is the situation now with the Palestinian state issue, that on September the 23rd, Mahmoud Abbas, who is the leader of the Palestinian Authority, he came before the United Nations and he made a formal request to the Security Council that a Palestinian state be recognized with East Jerusalem as its capital by the United Nations, having the Palestinian state being a full member of the United Nations. Now, the United States has said that they are going to veto that request. Therefore, that would mean that the Palestinians would not be full members of the United Nations. So why is that a significant prophetic event? Because the prophecy is that the nations will divide the land of Israel. And in Zechariah, in chapter 12, and verses 1 through 3, it says, "The burden of the word of the Lord for Israel, says the Lord, which stretches forth the heavens and lays the foundations of the earth, and forms the spirit of man within him. I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about, when they will be in the siege against Judah and Jerusalem. And in that day," what day? "The day of the Lord, will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it will be cut in pieces, though all people of the earth be gathered together against it." When the nations of the world have to vote on whether they're going to recognize a Palestinian state or not, I think that's the nations of the world burden themselves with Jerusalem, because the Palestinians want East Jerusalem to be the capital of that state. So we are seeing the fulfillment of this prophecy. And the process to bring this about has been formally going on since 1993, when on September the 13th, 1993, we had the signing of the Oslo Accords. And the Oslo Accords, what it did was Israel recognized the Palestinian Authority as the representatives of what they refer to as the Palestinian people. And the purpose and the desire of the Oslo Accords, September the 13th, 1993, was to create a Palestinian state. And so here we are 18 years later, and we're still dealing with the intent of the Oslo Accords. So this is a process that's been going on for quite a period of time. And the reason why it has taken 18 years is mainly because of the political position of the United States. And that is, they would like to see it come about by a handshake between the two parties. And right now, the majority of the world isn't concerned about a handshake. They're ready to just recognize it, just to say it is. The United States is the one that's primarily holding out for it to be done through negotiations. And because they have veto power, they're making it an issue of negotiations. Now, why does the United States want an agreement to be made through negotiations? It's because half of the Jews in the world live in the United States of America. And to the Democratic Party, of which Barack Obama is, in key states like Ohio and Florida, the Jewish vote can determine who wins Ohio or Florida in a presidential race. So therefore, they can't do things that so overtly cause the Jews to be upset with the political party in the United States. And so they have to do it in such a way that it makes logical political sense. And in the United States, that means that things are done through negotiations. And so, ultimately, the Bible does tell us that the nations will divide the land of Israel in the city of Jerusalem. To me, then, the only issue is it going to be done through UN votes, or is it going to be done through a handshake between the two parties? That's the only debate or the only issue, at least for me. Well, the Bible tells us that as a consequence of the nations dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem, it will bring about the judgment of the nations. In Zechariah chapter 14, verse 3, it says, "Then the Lord will go forth and fight against the nations, as when he fought in the day of battle." And the rabbis interpret the day of battle as being when Pharaoh and his army drowned in the Red Sea. Well, if we also go to the book of Joel, where it mentions in Joel chapter 3 and verse 2 that the nations are going to divide the land of Israel, it then says in verse 9, "Proclaim this among the Gentiles, prepare for war." So as a result of the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem, it will bring about the judgment of the nations. And looking at the bigger picture, the judgment of the nations entails war between the nations and also worldwide economic collapse. And so I believe the God of Israel has called me to be a watchman on the wall, according to Isaiah in chapter 62. And so, what did a watchman on the wall in ancient times do? He had a watchtower where he was able to see what was going outside of the walls of the city that the people couldn't see. And really, all what the watchman did is he's a reporter. He just tells what he sees. What is the situation? What is the condition? And so that is what I see in part is my calling, according to Isaiah in chapter 62, is to be a watchman on the walls of Jerusalem and to inquire what is the status of Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem is also synonymous with Zion. So when you inquire about the status of Jerusalem, you're really inquiring about the status of Zion. And as I shared yesterday, biblical Zion is the unification of the people of the God of Israel, the land of Israel, the Torah, and the Messiah. And it's the unity of all of these things. And it's come to my realization here in the last year or two, maybe the last few months, that we are battling the controversy of Zion right now. And what we see in our physical world is a representation of the spiritual world. Now, I was one of the very first people in this movement who had a website on the internet. My website came out in November of 1996. A lot of people didn't even have email in November of 1996. And I put together a website that had all types of links to Israel, links to understand our faith in Yeshua, that we should be keeping the Sabbath and the festivals, loving Him, keeping His commandments. But there was a curiosity in my mind when I put up the website as to, has anyone ever got to visit the website? And if they do, what if I made a form and said, those who are interested in studying Hebrew roots together on the internet and want to be a part of an email list, here, fill out this form. And I was quite amazed that people filled that out regularly, and they've been doing it for the last 15 years. And so I guess there's probably about 20,000 people in the last 15 years that's filled out that form. And it's a questionnaire. And one of the questions that I have on that form is, do you believe that there should be the dividing of the land of Israel? And so I file in a database the results of what people fill out on the form. And I'm willing to say about 98% of the people who fill out that form says, no, there should not be the dividing of the land of Israel. And I'm willing to say that if we took a survey of all of you, 98% of you would say, no, there shouldn't be a Palestinian state. We support the nation of Israel, and we support and we recognize the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So we're not fighting over that issue. It's the nations who are fighting about who owns the land. Now, I'm going to share with you the scripture. It's in Isaiah in chapter 34 in verse 8. It says, for the day of the Lord's vengeance, for it is the day of the Lord's vengeance and the year of recompenses or payback for the controversy of Zion. So we are definitely fighting the spiritual controversy of Zion. And that controversy that we're fighting in the, you might say, the spiritual world, we're fighting over spiritual issues, is who is Israel and who's not Israel? And if you're Israel, you're not in Israel, should you follow the Torah? And if you should follow the Torah, what Torah should you follow? And if you do believe and follow the Torah, whose Torah do you follow? And what about Yeshua? Is he the Messiah or not? And if he is the Messiah, is he Yahweh or not? These are the issues that are being debated, hotly debated, in our movement. So we're fighting and contending over three of the four issues, but we're seeing the land, the physical land battle being played out. And the nations of the world, they are pretty much universally citing that there should be a Palestinian state. Now, how do we look at this issue spiritually? Actually, what is being debated is, who is it that has the birthright? Because the one that has the birthright is the one that gets the land inheritance. And if you remember, there was a battle over the birthright between Jacob and Esau. And so the Bible rules for us that God gave the inheritance through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Esau has always resented the fact that he sold his birthright or that Jacob has it, and he wants it back. Now, we are coming to the Messianic Kingdom. And in the kingdom, we're told the following in Revelation in chapter 5 and verse 10. He's made us unto our God kings and priests, and we will reign on the earth. I don't know if you realize this, but in order to reign in the earth, you must be of the Melchizedek priesthood. You must have operating that you are a king, you are a priest, and you have the birthright blessing. And Adam was functioning in that capacity. And when he died, the oldest who was living then inherited that capacity. King, priest, and the birthright blessing. But ultimately, from Jacob, he split those functions so that Judah was given the kingship. And ultimately, the Levites, following the golden calf, took upon the duty of the priesthood. And in Genesis chapter 48, Ephraim and Manasseh was giving the firstborn or the birthright blessing. And one of the reasons why we don't have a messianic era right now is you cannot rule as a king and a priest on the earth unless those functions come together. And so the reason why you must have the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel before Yeshua sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives is you have to bring together the function of the kingship, that's Judah, with the priesthood and with the birthright blessing, which belongs to Joseph. And the enemy understands this. That's why in order for him to rule and reign in the earth, he has to do the same thing in a counterfeit way. So what is kingship? It's government. So he wants to try to bring together the world and have the countries of the world agree to a one world government system. And what's the priesthood? That's the religious system. So he needs to have that together with the governmental system, that there must be a religious system, worldwide religious system that endorses the political system. And then you need to have the birthright blessing, because the birthright blessing is the one that has ownership over inheritance. And so what's the counterfeit of that? That's the banking system. And so the enemy is trying to use money in the banking system to align things up politically, and by lining things up politically, get people to agree religiously and to bring together an international banking system, a world government system, under the auspices of all religions agree to work together, and it doesn't make any difference. As long as you believe in a God, you're okay. And now you have a counterfeit king, priest, and firstborn. So one of the things that we miss out on is what Messiah has done for us. Because in Messiah and in the renewed covenant, look, Revelation chapter 5 and verse 10, he's made us unto our God kings and priests. Now, in the Levitical priesthood system, a king couldn't be a priest. And a priest couldn't be a king. And so, but in Messiah, you can be a king and a priest, because that is after the order of Melchizedek. And in Messiah, we are firstborn. It says in Hebrews in chapter 12, Hebrews in chapter 12 in verse 22, you've come unto Mount Zion, Verse 23, to the general assembly and congregation of firstborn. In Messiah, I'm a firstborn. In Messiah, I'm a king. In Messiah, I'm a priest. So that's why Yeshua said, the kingdom is here already. The kingdom is in you. So I can operate in my life, in my faith in Yeshua, as a king, as a priest, and as a firstborn. And looking unto him and what he did for me as my place, to be able to have the right to do that. Not dependent upon who my mother and my father was. Not dependent upon physical flesh and blood. It's all based upon who he is and who he made me in him. Because do you realize whether you're of the nations or whether you are of the 10 tribes or whether you are of Judah, that's all based upon who your parents are. And faith in Messiah and how we express our faith in Messiah is based upon who he is, not based upon who our parents are. Anyhow, we have the nations dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem that brings about the judgment of the nations. So the judgment of the nations in the bigger context is war between the nations. And I believe there's going to be World War III, but the wars, the major wars, are going to be centered in the Middle East. And so what are those wars that are going to be fought? That's a part of the day of the Lord, that is a part of the judgment of the nations. So I'd like to share those for you. And Isaiah in chapter 17 is the first one I'm going to share with you. And it says in verse 1, the burden of Damascus. Behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. Verse 4, and in that day it shall come to pass. Now, when is Damascus ceasing from being a city? In that day. What day? The day of the Lord. So Damascus ceasing from being a city is a tribulation event. 2 weeks ago, it was in the Israeli internet newspapers that Assad of Syria said that if the West tries to do to him what they did to Gaddafi in Libya, that before he will allow that to happen, that he will send missiles in cooperation with Hezbollah and Hamas, send missiles at Tel Aviv. And Israel says, if you even think about sending missiles at Tel Aviv, we're going to eradicate the cities of Syria. And so in our news, they're already talking about Isaiah in chapter 17. It's inevitable that it is going to happen. The issue isn't whether it is. The issue is how long until it happens. But it's possible to happen today because they have the missiles. And they're pointed. Hezbollah and Syria's got missiles pointing at Israel, and Israel's got missiles pointing at Damascus. So it's possible. We could wake up tomorrow and it could happen. It's possible. Another war, Psalm chapter 83, it says, verse 2, for lo, your enemies make a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against the people and consulted your hidden ones. They've said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. And it mentions, verse 6, Edom, the Ishmaelites, Moab, the Hagarenes, Gabal, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher, the children of Lot. So these are the Arab countries that surround the nation of Israel, that together they're deciding, let's cut Israel off from being a nation. This is a part, I believe, of the wars of the tribulation period. And then we have a war between the United States and Iran. And I don't need to tell you that this has been mentioned about conflict with Iran, you know, since the Bush administration. In Isaiah in chapter 13, in verse 1, it says, the burden of Babylon. And then it says in verse 6, how for the day of the Lord is at hand. So the context is the day of the Lord. And then it says in verse 19, in Babylon, the glory of nations, or the glory of kingdoms, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. So who is regarded in the world as being the envy of the nations? That many people in the world would like to live in this nation and have the freedom and the liberties as this nation. To me, it's the United States of America. So here in Isaiah 13, the United States is codenamed Babylon. And I don't want anyone to misunderstand when I say this, that Babylon is a term, a general term, for the kingdom of darkness. And Babylon has many heads. There is a governmental Babylonian system. Any governmental system that is not operated by the God of Israel being the king of the universe, that's Babylonian government. So we're going to have his government when Yeshua sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives. And we have a religious Babylonian system. It says in John 14, verse 6, Yeshua said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes unto the Father but by me. And so there's a prescribed way that the God of Israel requires those to come before him. And if you don't do it that way, then it's a part of the Babylonian religious system. Now, we have the literal physical land of Babylon, and that's in the area of Iraq today. So this, I believe, is referring to a spiritual end time land of Babylon, which is only one component of the entire Babylonian system. And I believe here this is referring to the United States. But then it says in Isaiah chapter 13, verse 17, I will stir up the Medes against them. The Medes are the Iranians. And this is also repeated in Jeremiah in chapter 51. In verse 11, it says, make bright the arrows, gather the shields. The Lord has raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, for his device is against Babylon to destroy it. And here's your time reference, because it's the vengeance of the Lord. Well, what time reference is the vengeance of the Lord? It's the day of the Lord. But why is the Lord taking vengeance? Because the nations are dividing his land. So in the nations dividing the land of Israel, there's going to be a war between the United States and Iran. So, and then we have Ezekiel in chapter 38 and 39. Now, I want to give you a perspective of what I believe is going on in Ezekiel 38 and 39. And to get that perspective, we got to go back to Joel chapter 3 and verse 2, where it talks about the nations are going to divide the land of Israel. And then it says in verse 6, the children of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have you sold to the Grecians that you might remove them from their border. So an issue of the nations dividing the land of Israel is the children of Judah and Jerusalem will be removed from their border. They'll be kicked out of their home. So why does it say that they're sold to the Grecians? Because in what name is this being done? To create a democratic Palestinian state. And democracy is a Greek concept. So in the name of a democratic Palestinian state, Jews and Jude and Jerusalem, the nations desire to remove them from their homes. And this happened in August of 2005 for the Jews that were living in the Gaza. And so the thing you need to understand is from the nations dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem, they're going to want to enforce that dividing. And they're going to have to do it by force. There has to be a military invasion. So that being the case, we look at Ezekiel in chapter 38 and 39. And where does the Gog-Magog coalition, who or what are they invading? It says in Ezekiel chapter 38 and verse 8, it says they come against the mountains of Israel. And then in Ezekiel chapter 39 and verse 2, it repeats it. I'm going to bring you upon the mountains of Israel. This is not an invasion on the whole land of Israel. It twice mentions the mountains of Israel. And the mountains of Israel has a prophecy regarding it. It's in Ezekiel chapter 36 in verses 1 and 2. It says, Son of man, prophesy to the mountains of Israel and say, you mountains of Israel, hear the word of the Lord. Verse 2, thus says the Lord God, because the enemy has said against you, aha, even the ancient high places are ours in possession. The prophecy is that the enemy would say that the mountains of Israel belongs to them. And as a result, in Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 5, it says, thus says the Lord God, surely in the fire of my jealousy have I spoken against the heathen and against all of Esau, who have appointed my land for their possession with the joy of all their heart, with despiteful minds, to cast it for a prey. The Palestinians do not hide the fact that they want to do away with all of Israel. They do not want to recognize the state of Israel as being a Jewish state. They want it, once again, to be a complete land of Palestine, including what we call now Israel proper. So we're going to have war between the nations, and I believe in order to enforce the dividing of the land, you're going to have the Gog-Magog coalition, and they're going to be invading the mountains of Israel. The mountains of Israel is the West Bank in Jerusalem, or biblically Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. And if there's going to be a Palestinian state on 67 borders with East Jerusalem as its capital, as the Palestinians want it, that means the removal of 250,000 Jews in the West Bank, and the great many Jews who are living in East Jerusalem. And the Israeli army is not going to remove those Jews from their homes. Now, in the peace offer that Israel has made to the Palestinians, first by Ehud Barak in 2000 at Camp David, when President Clinton was there, and Yasser Arafat, Israel offered 95% of the West Bank as a Palestinian state, but Israel would keep 5% of the West Bank, where you have the majority, the vast majority of Jews that are living in the West Bank. And they also wanted to keep the Jewish neighborhoods of East Jerusalem. But Arafat rejected the offer. Ehud Olmert made an offer in the fall of 2008. It didn't get acted upon. And now what the Palestinians are currently demanding is they do not want one Jew in their state, and they are not willing to give Israel the Jewish neighborhoods in East Jerusalem. They're not willing to allow the Jews who are living in the West Bank for those areas to be annexed by Israel. And that's what Israel wants to do. Now, President Obama made a speech on May the 19th setting forth his policy that in an agreement between Israel and the Palestinians, it would be based upon 67 borders. And this is the key word, agreed land swaps. Well, agreement means both sides need to agree. And the Palestinians are not willing to agree that Jews, even Jews who are living in Jewish neighborhoods, that they would be permitted to be in East Jerusalem. They're not going to agree that 250,000 Jews, even if it's only 5% of the West Bank, be in the West Bank, live in the West Bank. They are not willing to have the 5% of the West Bank annexed and have it be a part of Israel. And so this is really what the present fight is about, is over the 5% of Jews who are living in the West Bank and the Jewish neighborhoods. Because Israel's already offered the other. They've already offered twice 95% of the West Bank. And so, in addition to there being war between the nations, war in the Middle East as a result of dividing the land, there will also be worldwide economic collapse. And I probably don't need to tell you that the conditions are right for that to happen as well. And right now, the United States is somewhere between $14 and $15 trillion in debt. The recognized, stated, admitted federal debt. And the Obama administration in the last 3 years has created more federal debt than the entire time from 1776 to the time of Bush the father being president. The total debt of all of those years from 1776 to 1992 is the debt that's only been increased in the last 3 years. And so we got a tremendous math problem that our politicians aren't willing to stand up and to deal with the problem. And in the current, in the budget deal that was made several months ago, basically what happened is before they made their agreement, you first heard the Democrats argue their political side and the Republicans argue their political side, so that when it's time to vote again, both the Democrats and the Republicans can go to the voters and say, look, this is what we believe. And then you can choose which one you believe and which one you prefer, the Democratic argument or the Republican argument. Meanwhile, the decision is not going to be made by Congress. The decision is going to be made by the super committee that's been appointed of these 12 people plus the president. And they are going to make a recommendation about what's going to be cut. And then, according to the agreement that was made, you can't amend it. You can't change it. What if there's one bad thing in there that the committee presents before the Congress that's a bad idea? Well, they have to vote yes or no. And if they vote no, then they're going to say, well, the United States is going to default on its debt. We can't have that. That's bad. So you got to give us the bad part of the bill, so that we don't have something greater that's worse happen. That is for us to default on our debt. That's where we're at. So the recommendation for this is to be made at the end of November, and the decision on it to be made at the end of December. So we have potential crisis coming up again regarding our debt, depending upon what the package is, depending upon whether Congress is willing to vote for it or not. We have a potential crisis coming up again in November and December of this year. Meanwhile, over in Europe, I don't need to tell you that there's a number of countries over there that are having problems. Greece is having problems. Portugal's having problems. Italy's having problems. Spain is having problems. And those who desire to ultimately one day have world government, they want to achieve this by first establishing regions of the world where the different regions that would be defined would first have their own currency, and then they would have a political union, and then the political union of these different areas are going to be a part of the one world government system. and so that that the goal is that ultimately, even though that you can vote, your vote won't count because you're just electing the low-level people. The high-level people that make the decisions, they get appointed. And so ultimately, you won't have a direct say about the policies that the governmental people decide upon. And so as a part of getting to that, getting this system in place, they know the people won't willingly accept it. So therefore, they have to bring it upon the people by crisis. So always the first step of the process is to come in and establish things economically. And in order to sell you on selling things economically, they got to tell you that if we combine our forces economically, everyone's going to be rich. So they said the reason why we needed to have a European Union is because, look, it's a big market of 280 million people, and we're going to be an economic powerhouse. Can you imagine pulling together 280 million people? Man, we're gonna be rich. But then they didn't set up the political system so that could function well on purpose, so that ultimately that because now you're dependent upon economic union, because you're dependent upon one currency, if you have a weak link in there, whether it's Greece or Spain or Italy, then you're gonna cry crisis. Oh my gosh, we're all gonna go down. So that's got to cause the strong nations to accept, in the name of survival, something they wouldn't have done on their own. And so this is orchestrated and planned. So the desire is that in order to save the collapse of the whole system, that the individual nations will vote to give up their economic sovereignty. And so what the leaders of Europe are now calling for, the bureaucrats, they're calling for more power to be given to European institutions, that these European institutions would decide the taxing mechanism of the European people, and they would decide and they would tell each country what their budgets would be. And make them abide by their budgets. In other words, each country's not making their own taxing decisions. Each country's not making their own budget decisions. They want that to be told and decided by bureaucrats who are not directly elected by the people. And they want to present it so that either you give us this power or else we'll collapse the system. And that's where we're at in Europe. There is calls being made right now to give us that power. And they said because if we don't do the right thing, Europe's going to collapse. And if Europe collapses, the world's going to collapse. So they're having meetings in November, European meetings, to decide whether that power is going to be given to European institutions or whether it's not, and they're going to collapse the system. Maybe in order to try to get the power, they may stretch the rubber band for 3-6 months. I don't know exactly the process, the detailed process. But it is fragile. So there is a possibility that there could be a collapse and a default by Greece or Spain or Italy or Portugal or maybe Ireland. It's possible it could happen soon and in the near future, or they could stretch the rubber band a little bit longer. It's possible that we can have economic dollar collapse in the United States, or they could stretch the rubber band a little bit longer. It's possible that there could be war in the Middle East, missiles being launched from Syria into Israel. It's possible that the United States could get into a conflict with Iran, or time can be stretched a little bit. I can't stand up here and say exactly how long it's going to be until these events actually do take place, but I can say the conditions are there that they could happen at any moment, and it's not something that you can say can be put off for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. It is in the near future, but I don't know when the near future is. I don't know whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, or whatever. But I do know it's possible. Because it is possible, one of the things that Yeshua said over and over when they ask him about the end of days when he's coming, they ask, he said these words, watch and pray, watch and pray. We're supposed to continue watching. Now, that does not mean that we're supposed to go hide in a cave and quit living our life. Watching does not mean that you get so afraid that you go over there, live in a cave, and quit living your life. You gotta continue living your life. But don't put your head in the sand. So it would be a wrong response to live your life in such a way that you put your head in the sand and ignore everything, and all of a sudden it takes you by storm, and you can't get out of the road of the chaos, of the collapse. But it would be equally wrong for you to be so consumed by what may happen that you go live in a cave and you're afraid to drive your car. You're afraid to go to the grocery store. You're afraid to get up in the morning. Because ultimately, Yeshua promised that he would bring deliverance. So ultimately, the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem brings about the judgment of the nations. And this, the judgment is war between the nations and economic collapse. But from war and economic collapse, the nations are going to restructure, and they are going to set up one world government with a new international financial system. And I believe the duration of time of that new system, Revelation 13, is 42 months. Now, I want you to notice in Revelation chapter 12, the woman that gives birth and then flees in the wilderness, it's for 42 months. The beast that comes to power and rules, it says he rules for 42 months. Same period of time. So there is a battle during that 42 months between the woman that's giving birth and what's being born is Zion. That Zechariah in chapter 9, verse 13, the sons of Zion will be at war against the sons of Greece. And that's what the 42 months are about. Now, it's during this time, that's the time set aside for the God of Israel to end the exile of the 12 tribes. And it's the birth of Zion, Isaiah chapter 66, that triggers the gathering and uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. So the reason why he's bringing you to Torah is not so we can fight how we're supposed to follow the Torah. It's because he's coming for a bride. And a part of the bride's dress is to be dressed in the Torah. Let's not lose perspective of why this is happening. It is, you are walking in Elijah's ministry to prepare you for the coming of the Messiah. And it's all about a bride being ready for her bridegroom. So your eyes are to be on Yeshua and him coming for you, and you be found loving him and keeping his commandments when he returns. Now, because I don't have much time, I got to throw out these principles quick, but I'm not going to be able to go into the details regarding them. And that is, how is that going to happen? The principle is, it will be according to how it was when the children of Israel came out of Egypt. Micah chapter 7, verse 15. Hosea chapter 2, verse 15 says, it will be like it was. And so, how was it? There was one that said no, Pharaoh. How will it be? You have the beast system that says no. What happened to Pharaoh when he said no? Plagues. What's going to happen when the beast system won't let the children of Israel return to the land? Plagues. It's the judgment of the nations. While there were plagues coming upon Egypt, that's when he delivered his people. While there's judgment on the nations, that's when he's going to be delivering his people. Now, how did he bring them out? Cloud by day and pillar of fire by night. How will he bring his people back to the land? Cloud by day, pillar and fire by night. And if you want the details of that, get the CD of my message that I did this morning, because I gave a detailed explanation of that process. So I've run out of time, and so we are going to use this time now to entertain questions.